Hello and welcome to the Working Parent Company podcast. My name is Sharon Charlton Thompson and I'm one of the founders here. I'm so delighted today to be able to speak with the wonderful and groundbreaking Jackie Holder. Jackie is a leadership coach and coach trainer, and she works corporately and in the NHS with senior leaders, with nurses, midwives, GPs. Her work is an incredible contribution to the field of coaching. She is an expert in journaling and creative writing. She runs many workshops, online events for writers and creatives nationally and internationally, and is the author of 4 non-fiction titles, 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well, Be Your Own Best Life Coach, Soul Purpose, and as she'll mention in the call, a brilliant illustrated writing map, which is a wonderful resource for families, called Writing with Fabulous Trees. I have known Jackie for quite a few number of years. I love the work that she has done on journaling and creative writing. And I would really encourage also you checking out her website, jackieholder.com, where there are loads of creative writing ebooks and creative resources and lots of free downloads on her website and her newsletter that you can subscribe to. So today we talk about the inner critic. We talk about why journaling is so helpful as a sort of 24-hour therapist or coach in your pocket. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Okay. Hello, Jackie.
Hello, Sharon. I get to spend some quality time with you this morning.
Oh, well, likewise. I mean, we've known each other for quite a few years. I remember when I first met you, we were co-running, or I was running a women's leadership program, and you came in and did a nested workshop on journaling.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember that. And we went out for dinner that night.
And that was it.
And that was it. The rest
friends for life. Absolutely. You know when you meet a kindred spirit.
Yeah. And I remember thinking then that I'd met somebody groundbreaking.
Oh, that's...
I didn't know until probably quite a while after that how much you had contributed to the world of coaching, because it was a while after that that I remember looking through coaching at work copies, and I thought, I know that person. It was you on the front cover.
Back in the day.
So I want to say thank you for the contribution you've made to coaching around journaling and creative writing, because it's been an enormous contribution both to coaching and also for emotional well-being. So thank you.
What a lovely way to start off our conversation today.
So I want to ask you about journaling, about creative writing. There's something about my own journaling practice that I know is so helpful in sort of expanding my sense of self and accessing, you know, the sort of inner wise version of me I can access in my journal writing. Not always, I hasten to add, but often. And also that it forms, if I'm ever journaling about things I want to let go of, for example, or things I want to let in, that would be a classic sort of journaling prompt for me, that it can act as a sort of deeper form of accountability. Mm-hmm. Of how I'm wanting to be in my life, who I'm becoming, what's important, etc. I started journaling, I reckon, 20 years ago. I did a Julia Cameron workshop on the artist's way. And I love writing, but I found it, I love creative writing, but I actually found it quite like another thing to do at the beginning, you know, the morning pages, sit, write, free writing, etc. 20 years later, I almost can't start the day without journaling. So it's completely become a positive habit for me. What would you say about why journaling matters and why it's helpful?
Oh, thank you for that. And I just want to say that we have a similar entry point into journaling, because I really anchored and planted my journaling practice when I started Julia Cameron's Morning Pages. And it was at a time where I was a young mum, well, late 20s. I'm not sure you could call that necessarily young, but I was a mum. I was in a really kind of quite a pivotal point in my career where I was doing a lot of a corporate job, and it was quite significant in terms of the role that I had, leading women's training in a local authority. And there was a lot of pressure, a lot of expectations. And I think that underneath it all, there was a lot of rumbling going on inside of me. And so my friend, one of my friends in America, she sent me The Artist's Way as a birthday present. Oh. And it arrived on the day of my birthday through the letterbox. And I remember I was off sick from work, stress related. And I was in, my daughter had gone to school, and I would just literally climb back into bed because that's about all I could do. And The Artist's Way arrived. I had no idea it was coming my way. And as soon as I opened up the book and started reading it, I went and got a journal and I started writing. And within a week, I was back at work, more energized, more alive, more engaged. So I often talk about how journaling came into my life from a personal lived experience. So many people talk about your journals being your 24-hour therapist. It's inexpensive. You can almost write on anything. You can do it anywhere, and it's always open. And that's how I have experienced a journal. So for me, it's a way of pressing pause. It's a way of offloading and downloading my thoughts and my feelings. So if you imagine a photo or illustration of a person with lots of lines going around inside the top of their head before journaling, after journaling, the thoughts have unwrapped themselves, they've unraveled themselves. So it's a way of really processing emotion, the feelings first, because feelings often come before emotions. What the journal can do is to help you gain clarity and understanding about your emotions.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just listening sort of, you know, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, because as you speak, I'm thinking that a lot of my processing is in my journal. That's full of is the process of what I experience day in, day out, you know, the process of what it's like to be me, the highs and lows, the difficulties and challenges, and the joys and wins, etc. And it's like almost, it's a way of sort of catching up with myself. That's how I think about it.
I really like that, a way of catching up with yourself, because if you think about it, I was actually thinking about the lots of the conversations that I'm having with coaching clients. So I'm working, I do an enormous amount of work in the NHS, so I'm coaching a lot of GPs at the moment. And one of the things they keep saying outside of themselves is that their patients are kind of more angry, sort of more aggressive in the way they're coming into the practice and the surgeries. I'm also thinking about what I was talking to one of my sisters who's a head teacher, and she's saying how the teaching staff are saying how parents are being more aggressive, more demanding. So much of that is rooted in people not having places to safely and in a healthy way to process their feelings and their emotions. We get lost in our iPhone screens, in Facebook, Instagram, all of the other social media platforms, and it actually adds to the volume of stuff that we're not finding the right outlet to express it, release it, to write it. The thing for me about journaling is you're not just writing it, you're also in a process of reflecting on it. It's not just the doing of it, it's the being with it to almost extract what you want to sort of come up from underneath the surface, what's going to be really helpful for you, what's providing insights for you, what do you need to change, what needs to be different. That's what we want our journaling to be able to do for us.
It's fascinating that you talk about anger, that you bring that in, because I journaled on anger last week. That it was prompted. Yeah, I get journal prompts from everywhere, a lot from your books, by the way. So just a shout out to two of your books that are always nearby for me. One is 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well, and one is called Soul Purpose. So just a shout out for those, and we can mention the other books because I know there's more, Jackie. Last week I was watching, I hope I'm not the only person watching Netflix more than I've ever watched.
Hello, do you see my hand?
Yeah.
I fell asleep crying last night to a Netflix film.
It's just, you know, thank God our telly is so good in this country is what I've got to say about that. But I can't remember if it was Netflix or Sky, but I was watching The Undoing with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. So I'm a bit late to the party because, you know, lots of friends are watching it before Christmas. Donald Sutherland plays Nicole Kidman's father. And there's a line that he said in it that just really resonated with me. He's talking about the murder that his son-in-law has committed. The son-in-law has murdered his lover. And Donald Sutherland says, to be angry is to be human, or something like that. To be angry is to be human. And it's interesting where I get my journal prompts from. So to be angry is to be human. What you're talking about here, Jackie, is when we don't digest and process emotion, then what happens to it? When I wrote that at the top of the page, to be angry is to be human, you know, and I sit for a while and then I start to free write, you know, just about anger, etc. I was amazed at how much anger I had in me at this time of lockdown. Anger about, you know, the government, anger about delays in responding, anger about Capitol Hill, anger about climate, anger about, just so much was there. And my journal then becomes a witness to that. So I write it all out, you know, my furious rage comes out on the page and it is no longer undigested. And when I'm coaching, often it's the undigested, the unprocessed feelings and emotions that bend us out of shape. You know, when we're feeling resentful towards a boss, or when we're feeling frightened of somebody that we work with that's intimidating or something, or if we've lost our courage about a conversation that we know we need to have, but it's the last blooming thing we want to do. All of that is human. All of that is to be human, to have all those feelings. My journal gives me a place to process stuff that otherwise would remain undigested. And when it's undigested, that's when I get pulled out of shape.
So this is so important, because just going back to the first thing that you said, that you get journal prompts from everywhere. And I was like, okay, now we're talking, because I really want to encourage, so I know a lot of your audience listening to your podcast are working parents.
Yeah.
And, you know, not everyone is going to go out and buy a book. You know, we're both lovers of books.
Yeah.
We know a lot of people like us, but not everybody is into books in the same way that we are.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is absolutely universal to my journal practice is getting prompts from anywhere in life. So like you, I'll be sitting watching a film and all of a sudden someone will say something and I'm literally scrambling over myself either to press the pause button so I can rerun it, so I can write it down in my journal, or I'm scrambling to get a piece of paper or something to write it on. And I was thinking about, and I'm really going to botch this up, but I'll go for it. It was a film about the priest who has he comes to this crossroads in his life and he has this family that's got a lot going on. It's an Irish Catholic priest, really well-known actor. Just can't remember the name at the moment.
I can't remember either, but I remember he was a sexy priest.
What was his name?
It was a good-looking priest. I can't remember the name of the thing. Yeah. I remember it was a good-looking priest.
And there was this line at right towards the end where he's almost come into self-acceptance of his flaws and his strengths, where for some reason all the parishioners have all come out to service that he's doing, which he's quite blown away by because of what's gone on for him. And this one little girl comes up to him as he's giving them they're doing the Holy Communion. And she says something like, "Thank you, you perfect, lovely, beautiful priest." And he's like, "That's weird. Like, oh my God, she just said something beautiful to me." And then the next person says the same thing to him. And then the next person after that. And I'm sitting there writing that line down and thinking, that is a wonderful example of what it is to accept ourselves unconditionally.
Yeah.
And that made its way into my journal, because so often we're not accepting ourselves. We're judging ourselves. You know, we're saying as parents, we're not doing enough. We haven't got enough. You know, we need to spend more time with our children. We need to do this. We need to do that. We're constantly depleting a sense of self.
Yeah. Now, here's one thing I do in my journaling. Tell me what you think of this. To sort of help with that is that if I'm writing, I mean, I don't do this all the time, but if I'm writing and I feel that judge, you mm-hmm. know, I'll often find myself when I'm coaching saying to clients, okay, so take the judgment out of that. And then what's there? What's there mm-hmm. with the judge? So sometimes if I'm feeling that, you know, the inner critic, the judge, whatever we ought to call it, I will give that voice in my journal. I will only speak from that part. And sometimes an exercise that I was shown not that long ago, actually, maybe 2 years ago, I was shown this exercise. I've also in my journal interviewed my judge.
Yes.
I interviewed my inner critic. And yeah. I remember, you know, saying, wow, apparently you're the best inner critic in the whole wide world. You mm-hmm. know, as you are the queen of inner critics, you know, pretending to be a journalist. Tell me how you're such an amazing inner critic. What is your purpose? What is your, you know, what are you there for? What are you trying to protect Sharon from? What are you trying to persecute Sharon with? You know, just all that, getting that done on the page. I mean, you say like a 24-hour coach or therapist, it's an amazing resource to have.
So that's one of the exercises that I have used for years on my creative writing and journal writing retreats and workshops. So I created this about 20 questions where you interview the inner critic in the same way that you've just done. And I think what you so beautifully expressed is that when you do it in this way, you are in relationship with the inner critic in a way that is relational, and they are not driving the bus.
Yeah.
Now they are taking a back seat in the bus because you've had a conversation with them that gives you a better understanding. Because remember, the inner critic, the judge, the censor, whatever name you want to give to that particular voice, had an original purpose. And that original purpose was in defense or protection of the more vulnerable parts of ourselves that was exposed to the world that could have got hurt or derailed in some way. And very often what's happened is that the judge, the censor, the inner critic has overplayed that role, and they need us to help manage how they show up in our lives. And I can think, Sharon, you will really connect with this because we both trained as therapists, in that we, in the therapy that I was trained in, the work of Roberto Assagioli in psychosynthesis, we do a huge amount of work on what we call the subpersonalities. So the subpersonalities are all the different personalities that make us who we are, the good, the bad, the different, and the ugly. Doesn't matter. The whole point is that we learn to integrate and synthesize all of those personalities, all of those selves that are part of, you know, the Jackie and the Sharon that shows up in life every day. Your parents, your colleagues, your coachees who show up in life every day, and to allow them to, it's almost like be an orchestra,
yes,
that learns how to play, yeah, together. Yeah. So, you know, that inner critic doesn't come in and derail you just at that point where you're writing that blog post.
Yeah.
Or you're writing that essay, that you're really bringing together all the things that you know are really important for you to say in that piece.
Yeah.
Your inner critic knows that it can just step back, yeah, because it's not needed right now. Your wise voice, your resourceful self, that voice is the one that is needed now. And that's the one that needs to be driving the bus.
I think this parts work is really helpful in the coaching space and really helpful in journaling and creative writing, because, you know, there is a part of me that's the inner critic. There's a part of me that's the wise self.
Yes.
There's a part of me that might feel angry. There is a part of me,
yep,
that might feel insecure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all these different parts, and they all make up who I am in the world. What my journal allows me to do is to get into relationship with those, yeah, parts, particularly with the critic, where often we just want to shut that voice up. We want to,
mm-hmm,
distract ourselves from it, or we want to fight with it. And we know that doesn't work. We know actually that the critic is probably, in my case, about 5 years old. And just as I wouldn't say to a five-year-old who came to me and said, I'm really scared, I don't think you should take on that job, you're not good enough, you know, they're going to find you out, they're going to give you a tap on the shoulder and say, sorry, love, you know, you're not up to the, you know, just as a five-year-old would come to that with those worries, that my critic, what it needs is not man up, get on with it, pull yourself together. What it needs is to sit on my knee and have a cuddle.
It needs compassion, Sharon. It needs compassion.
I get it. I get
you. Yeah.
And that's what I mean about the catching up, because then my wise self can talk to the critic, or my adult,
yes,
talk to the critic and say,
yep,
I get you're frightened. I completely get you're frightened. Of,
mm-hmm,
course, you're 5 years old. But I've got your back and we're going to take this step together. And then I'm in relationship with the critic. And then I wouldn't say I'm more in control of it, but I have a different relationship with it, and it's not so in control of me.
Yeah, that's why we say it's not driving the bus anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in the driving seat, and it is a different relationship. And the other thing is that when you are able to have that sort of relationship with the inner critic, it frees up what they call the working memory, that executive function of the mind and the brain, where we are more resourceful, where we can bring together, it's almost like the left brain and the right brain, the rational and linear brain working with a more creative, intuitive brain, and working in unison. So you're actually freeing up more space for that working memory,
yeah,
to be more available to you.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, when we're stressed, when you push the inner critic away, where it's got to find another way to come back,
yeah,
in, do you know, it's like that, yeah, closes down the working memory.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, so the journal is a way, it's a form of liberation.
Yeah.
It's a form of freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially in this digital time. You know, I always encourage people to write by pen.
Yes.
Because of the digital overload. You know, the times that are spent, you know, I think about the pen between my fingertips is almost like me saying I'm taking some breathing space away from the fingertip that is swiping across the iPhone or the iPad screen and falling into that vortex, like that black hole where there is nowhere to breathe.
Absolutely. Can we talk about busy? Because what's coming to mind for me to speak is working parents during the pandemic, nobody wants an extra thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm really conscious of that. You know, when I look at things like LinkedIn, gosh, I hope we're not guilty of this on our LinkedIn, but maybe we are to an extent. You know, it's all 10 top tips to do this and 3 top tips to do that. And, you know, we're all screaming self-care at people, but where the systems that we're working in don't support self-care. So it feels like another thing to do to start a journaling practice. And I know with myself and with client experience that I have, you ask a busy, overwhelmed person,
mm-hmm.
they have 30 minutes or 50 mm-hmm. minutes in their diary at the start of the day, either to sit with some mindfulness practice or to think about intentions for the day or to journal, you know, a real sort of power 30 minute strategic time. For a busy person, if your relationship to stillness and to space hasn't been there for a long time because you've mm-hmm. been busy, 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 you almost don't know how to be in that space or how to start. What can you say about that, Jackie, about, you know, how do we value something like journaling and make a start at it when it's probably the last thing we want to do is do something else?
Well, it's something that I see all the time. I see it on the leadership programs that I work on. People sort of space out when you say you're going to have 3 minutes or 5 minutes, or lo and behold, I say 7 minutes. They start to really freak out, like, now that's really taking it too far. And also in individual coaching sessions. So the superpower for me around this is starting small. Can you write a word that describes how you're feeling right in this very moment? Can you write a sentence that describes what's going on for you right now? Can you write 2 lines in 3 minutes about what you most need to be thinking about, paying attention to, in relation to your work or your life or some other element or what's going on for you right now? And that is the way I invite or I coax people to arrive on the page.
Yeah.
And often what happens is they'll do 2 minutes and they realize that actually this isn't bad and I could go for another 2 minutes. So sometimes I simply will just observe a group on Zoom. And if everyone's head stays down, I'll just let it stay down until people start to kind of bring themselves back into the space. And before you know it, they've done 5 minutes or they've done 7 minutes and they realize that it's doable. So if you add up the number of hours that we spend every week scrolling through social media, it doesn't equate to what it would take to give over an hour divided over a week to writing in this kind of analog way.
Mm.
And of course, we know there are psychological, emotional, and physical benefits in terms of writing about difficult and challenging emotions and experiences through the work and research of Dr. James Penny Baker. We also know there are the same psychological benefits in terms of improved immune systems, less visits to the doctor's office, better physical health, increased dopamine and serotonin, just a whole host. And they're very similar for whether you're writing about difficult, challenging things, which in the James Penny Baker research, which is a longitudinal study, is done in a very contained way. So you write for 4 to 5 consecutive days for 15 to 20 minutes about a very difficult episode or experience that you've had from the past or in the present.
Yeah.
Sometimes they say don't write about something that's too current. You need to give it a little bit of space, bit of breathing room. Before you come to it on the page. But on the whole, the research findings from it have been quite phenomenal. Again, think about it. That's contained 15 to 20 minutes. And that's doable for most people. Even the most hard-pressed, busy parent can find that window of time in their day.
Yeah. Well, I just know the benefits are so huge that... Yeah. I now value the time. It's value in the time, isn't it? Seeing a value in it that allows us to devote the time to it.
Sharon, can I just add a couple of prompts? Because the other thing is that I think the blank page is intimidating for a lot of people. So one of the things that really works well in all of our workshops is around sharing journal prompts. So that's where you started, you know, with you'd grab your journal prompts. Everywhere, but we're quite seasoned journal writers, and a lot of people aren't. So yes. One of the things that I do is I share journal prompts with them. So can I share a couple that I would love to share with your working parents? So so here are some that are just a really good way of getting on the page. Okay, so you could start off with a prompt like, how are things with me right now in this current moment? What's on my mind today? What's one or two things that really went well today, no matter how small they are? How can we make this current time that we're in less daunting? What's irritated me today? What am I unsure about right now? What made me smile? What am I grateful about? What's the biggest stress that I'm up against? How could I reduce that stress at home? Where are the places and what are the things that I do that make me feel peaceful and calm? And how could I do more of those things in my everyday? Who or what is allowing you or is distracting you? What isn't working for you? How can we make home even more comfortable now that we're having to spend more time here? And, you know, once you start with one prompt, you can make up your own.
Yeah.
But actually having those at the front of a journal, the back of a journal, whenever you feel you go blank,
go
to a prompt.
I often come back to the question, the journal prompt, what is it time for?
Yeah, I love that. Mm. What is it time for? Mm. And you know what I really appreciated when you shared that with me in another conversation is that it's come from you. And that's what really the prompts, when I'm sharing prompts, it's really as a stimulus for you to come up with your own prompts. Mm. Because I think when we're so motivated when something kind of rises up from inside of our own inner wisdom.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, I love that. To me, that's your signature journal. That's Sharon's signature journal prompt. Now we're branding, Sharon.
You'll see a lot of what is it time for if I showed you my open question, and I always have a response, which is extraordinary, really. And the response will be different, sometimes it will be the same, but you know, there's always a response to that question. What is it time for? Could be time for a cup of tea, I need to take a break. It could be time for me to really think about, are the kids okay, you know, with this homeschooling and stuff? Do I need to check in with them? It could be time for, you know, I notice could be time for, yeah, I need to invest into my relationships or a relationship, or it could be time for me to sit still. Any of my clients that are listening will know this is one of my favorite quotes, and I get a lot of my prompts from poetry because I love poetry. Mm-hmm. Particularly the work of David White, John O'Donohue, Mary Oliver. T.S. Eliot wrote a poem, I think it's called Ash Wednesday, and one of the quotes is, teach me how to care and teach me how not to care. Teach me to stand still. That can be a journal prompt for me. How do I care and how do I not care? Particularly as I think as a working mum, because boundaries are so important. And like so many people, we can fall into overcaring what people think, overcaring what, you know, with our kids, overcaring, you know, being the mother to everyone and everything. So my boundary comes in, and I journal on boundaries a lot as well, but my boundary comes in with, I need to be able to open my heart and close my heart. I can't be there to care. I need to know when I've given enough. So another journal prompt could be, when do I know when I've given enough? I had a client on the weekend contact me on the weekend, and I have a rule that I don't respond on weekends, by and large, to clients. I often don't even look at email on weekends. And then on Monday morning, you know, there's something about the quick response versus the quick reaction versus the considered response. you know, my because caring is such a strong part of me, you know, the in my DNA, my quick reaction might be a client needs me, I need to call them back. But my considered response when I give it time by Monday morning, by keeping to my boundary, is actually, unless it's a crisis, that client's issue requires and deserves full attention. And that full attention is in your coaching session or in your therapy session, whatever it is. And so I can write back from that place, not write back from the quick reaction. Somebody needs me, I have to be there. You know, becoming a slave to the other all the time, repeatedly. So journaling for working parents around the flashpoints of boundaries, confidence, balance, what settles me, caring for our kids, home blooming, schooling. There's so much that is rich territory there that can be so helpful when you write it down on the page.
There's so much that you're sharing here. I'm now writing down the prompts that you're talking about because they're going to go into my journal. So how do I care and not care? That T.S. Eliot poem, I will be searching for that immediately. I think this is I really want to encourage working parents that this can be a way that you can follow your curiosity.
Yeah.
You can become more observant of the life that you're in. So you're not just living in your life, you're working on your life. You know, that Michael Gerber quote, I hope I got it the right way around, the E-myth.
Yeah.
But I want to share something that shows the parallels of where we both are in our journaling practice that I hope will be really helpful for working parents as well. So when I was preparing for our podcast, I was thinking, what do I want to share today? What's, you know, really important in thinking about how more families can journal together? So like even in terms of a family journal, a lot more people are talking about their experiences of keeping a family journal. And one of the ideas that I wrote down was this idea, and something that I've been working with, is like how poetry can really be great journal prompts.
Yeah.
And I was listening to this podcast and I came across this poem. And you'll see why I want to share this with you. I'm just going to read it. It's called Lost by David Wagoner. It said, lost, stand still. The trees and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger. You must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen, it answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. No two trees are the same to raven. No two branches are the same to wren. If what a tree or bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Now, when I heard that poem, it was David White in conversation with somebody who recited it. I scrambled again, another scramble for the journal, wrote it down. I could think of parallels for individuals that I'm working with, groups that I'm working with right now in what we're calling a triple pandemic. How many people are feeling lost? And then another quote that I saw then maybe a couple of days later was that lost is a lovely place to find yourself. And, you know, a poem can speak so much more to our inner feelings than we can sometimes directly say and express.
That's what I love about poetry. I don't have to read a whole book, you know.
Absolutely.
The thing that stands out in that for me, I hope I haven't lost my thread, but it said about a powerful stranger.
Yes.
And that comes back to what we were talking about processing and digested stuff, because we are all potentially a powerful stranger to ourselves.
Yes.
And my journal allows me to access, to be a witness to that powerful stranger, and to harness her power, and to bring the goodness of that, if you like,
yeah,
the goodness of that. There's and the other thing that I heard in that poem was it answers.
And my forest breeze, listen, yeah, it answers. It answers.
My journal brings me answers.
Yeah. And those are answers that you don't have to pay anybody for.
Yeah.
You know, you can go retrieve the answers yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and you, just the way in which we've just, you know, just sharing the poem, I was thinking about in a family journal, if you had a poem for the week, everyone could just choose a line,
yeah,
and just journal from it. You know, you
mention your new book that I know you're encouraging families to use at the moment.
The Writing with Fabulous Trees, what writing map. Yes, so it's an illustrated writing map that folds down, and you literally, it's so easy to carry around. But what it does is it's about connecting us with nature outside of us, so we can connect with our inner self-exploration. So it's using nature as journaling prompts. So it has these 12 journaling prompts. It has a little bit of text. So it might say, you know, observe a solitary tree in a park, a city square, or on the street that you live in, and imagine what this tree has weathered, its storm, the storms it survived. Write the story for your tree. And so often when we connect with a metaphor like a tree, or the you know, an object like a tree, we can connect with the storms that we've weathered, that your teenager has gone through,
yeah,
that you've come through. What about, what's helped you stay rooted? When did you notice you blossomed again? What branches fell off?
Yeah.
You know, and then at the end, each one has got a little quote. So at the end of this quote, it says, sometimes when you're in a dark place, you think you've been buried, but you've actually been planted. So when we're going through difficulty, sometimes we think there's no light at the end of the tunnel. But what if you reframe that into, actually, I've been planted somewhere new, somewhere different. I've got new soil, new conditions, new environment, new people, new places.
Oh, it's so optimistic. I love it. So much hope in that.
Don't we need that now, Sharon?
We need it more than ever. We need it more than ever. It's another good thing to journal on. Where am I getting my hope and my optimism?
Oh, what lovely.
Joy. What brings me joy? What,
yes,
what puts a spring in my step? What has me walk taller? All of that. Yeah. Listen, I could go on and on and on. This conversation reminds me of why I always think of the word groundbreaking when I think of you. I want to ask you one final question, which is post-pandemic, as we know it, what are you most hoping for yourself or for the world?
I hope that in this time, or the time beyond the pandemic, that we will all step back into life with a knowing of what we want to spend more time doing or being, in a way that is signature to the sacredness of the self that we really are. Mm. You know, I've sat here several times over the last couple of weeks and just had immense moments of gratitude for the work that I do, the creativity that I am given opportunity to express, and how happy and satisfying I experience that minute by minute. Mm. And I just have such a deep gratitude and reverence for that. Mm. And I think each of us, we're in a space now where we can really tap into what's meaningful and important to you, that you want to give a pivotal space and place in your life going forward. What Howard Thurman says, do what brings you alive. Yeah. What brings you alive? We need people who are alive.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for the incredible coaching work you're doing with our NHS at the moment. Thank you for sharing your wisdom today.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I hope there was something that you got out of my conversation with Jackie that encourages you to start writing and start small. Listen out for our next podcast, which will be released in a few weeks' time. But above all else, please stay well, stay resourced, and stay connected. Thank you for listening.